So now that we've delved into some of the deeper themes of mikvah, let's go back to the very beginning. Let's go back to the very Torah source of mikvah and try to understand many of the fascinating halachic sugyas and Ian sugyas relating to this topic. So the Torah source, the pasuk says, "Ach mayanu bor," and the end of the pasuk says, "Yeh tahor." So the pasuk is discussing two different types of mikvahs. One is a mayan, which essentially is water that's already deep in the ground, so like an ocean, or let's say, you know, you dig water and you find a wellspring, some water that's already existing. And then a bor is a receptacle. Basically, you dig a hole and it receives rainwater. So nowadays, most communities are using rainwater, use a bor. But we have a fundamental question, which is, how do we know, for what is the Torah makor, what's the Torah source for the fact that you go into a mikvah to become tahor? So the pasuk says yeh tahor. What does yeh tahor mean? So Rashi actually gives two explanations on the pasuk of what yeh tahor means. The first one is not what you think. The first one is not saying that you'll become tahor if you go into this body of water. It's saying the water itself of the mikvah remains tahor and cannot become tamei. So it's saying it has nothing to do with a person going to the mikvah or a person going out of the mikvah that they'll become tahor. If you were, let's say, tamei or nida or whatever it is, yeah, tahor, according to this interpretation, means that the mikvah is immune. It cannot become mikabel tumah. As in what? As in once you get a shame mikvah, it becomes immune to being mikabel tumah. So this is not really shayach nowadays, because we're not really machmir for tumah taharah. So yes, there are things which are halachically still relevant in this regard. So for example, schach can be mekabel tumah, anida, when it comes to kesem, the only issue is if it falls on something that's mekabel tumah. So, for example, nafkamin is toilet water. If toilet water is considered to be meikarka, so it's water that's connected to the ground, then it's like a mikvah and won't be mekabel tumah. So that comes up in Shas. There are a couple sugyas related to this. But for the most part, according to this first interpretation of Rashi, this is not very helpful for learning out what we know as a mikvah. This is just saying that water that is this type of water would not become tamei. But the second interpretation of Rashi is that the person who goes into the mikvah will become tahor. Not that the water remains tahor, but that you can become tahor by entering into this water. And lehalacha, we accept both shitos of Rashi, but the second one is very important because that's our source for mikvah. So just an important aside, there is a concept of mayim chayim. So mayim chayim is really only for a zav, and the Torah discusses mayim chayim as a mikvah. Comes up in Parshat Metzora. In addition to bor and mayan, this mayim chayim is water that's flowing. It's a mayan that's flowing, and it's really only for zav. We're not going to talk about it much right now. But when it comes to mikvahs, we saw two different types. We saw a bor, a pit that collects rainwater, and we saw a mayan. Now, there's some major, major distinctions between these two. And we have to understand what the reason behind these distinctions are. For example, of the size. A bor has to be 40 saw. 40 saw, we explained the depth behind the number 40 in the previous year. But the idea of having a specific size, why does it have to have a specific size? And number two, it has to be stagnant. It can't be moving or flowing. It has to be ashborin, stagnant. So what's the idea here? So first, just understanding that a bor has to be 40 saw, which the shear of 40 saw practically is that it covers the whole body of a person at once. And a mayan doesn't have to have a set shear. It has to, you know, it just needs to be as big as whatever is being placed into the mayan. So it kind of practically has to be 40 saw, as in you have to be able to fit in it, but not fundamentally 40 saw. As in, you know, there are, by the way, some are starting to think that the only difference is really for kalim. For kalim, it can be less than 40 saw, but even, I mean, according to several Rishonim, even a Mayan requires 40 sa'ah for Tfilas Adam, when a person goes in. So it's not clear that there's a distinction here, but many Rishonim do still feel that there is a distinction, and that only a boy requires 40 sa'ah, Mayan doesn't. But 40 sa'ah is required for a human being to immerse. Oh, let's say the person is short. Let's say, like, not every, you know, universal shear applies to everybody. So there are ways of making chalukim and distinctions. But one, at least according to many poskim, one distinction is size. It has to be 47 as a boar. And another is it has to be stagnant. Meaning what? A boar cannot be moving, flowing. You can't have a crack or a leak, a zochlin. You can't have anything like that. The whole idea of a boar, according to at least the Mordechai, some of the modern poskim quote the Mordechai, that the definition of a mikvah is kava v'kaimi, as in it's literally it's static. So Rav Chaim in Brisk used to build his mikvah above ground so you can easily see if there's a leak, because the whole idea of this kind of boar is that it's not moving. Why? So, and why is El Mamayin allowed to be flowing? So if we go back to how we developed the theme of what a mikvah is, we're going back to our ultimate source, we're going back to our root of perfection, we're going to our natural root, we're going to a point of our own existence that's shalem, that's complete, that's static, that's perfect. So the idea that the mikvah is creating that means that the mikvah also needs to be that. So the mikvah needs to be static. So what's the idea of mikvah? It's natural, it's pure, it's at root. So there's two forms of that. One is that it's natural in the sense that this is a natural water body, a natural waterbed. So that's a mayan. Its natural state is flowing. But for us to create a natural body of water, for us to create a mikvah, then the natural element of that type of body of water would be that it would have to be static. So the fact that it can't be flowing and there has to be, I mean, we're getting back to something which can create a reformation, a recreation of self, that's Furisa, and we're creating something which is static and pure and root-oriented, so it can't be moving or flowing, it can't be in the realm of time, of movement, that has to be static. So that would be an interesting way of approaching this type of big distinction. And there are other ways of approaching it as well. We're not going to get into it right now. But the basic question is, what is a mayan and what is a boar? So for example, let's say you have a river. What's a river? Is a river a mayan? Doesn't seem to be, right? Because what's a mayan? A mayan is water that's in the ground. It's water that's dug up. Right? An ocean also is another example. You can use this feels Adam or feels Kalim. But a river is complicated. Why? Because a river, it might be a mikveh, it might be mayan, it's not clear. It might be a boar, but a stam mikveh is a boar. It might be a boar, it might be mayan. Why? Because if the river is a mayan, it was natural rainwater, then it's fine. But if it's a boar, it'd be puzzle. Why? Because it's moving, it's flowing. So the Gemara actually discusses this and says it really depends on the season, because it's flowing, so if it's a mayan, it's fine, but it's, you know, it might not be in like a natural body where it might be rainwater, and then it won't be kosher. So the halacha, according to the Gemara, is that it depends on the season. And the Gemara says that in the winter, where the majority is rainwater, it's pasul, because then it's a boar that's moving. But if it's not a rainy season, the majority is not rainwater, then it'd be kosher. So there is a question, which is that there's another Gemara that seems to imply that a river is always kosher. And that would, you know, seem to contradict this, which would say that it depends on the season. So the reason why that Gemara would assume that, either maybe it assumes that there's always more mayan than rainwater, so therefore it's okay that it's flowing because the rainwater is not the majority. And the svara there would be that the rainwater causes the other water to come to the surface, and you would kind of create this assumption that conceptually you are in a majority of non-rainwater, which is complicated to create categories in larger bodies of water, which is it dependent on the whole river? Is it dependent on where you are? How do you create those boundaries? So there are different shitas within the poskim, within some of the more modern poskim, some of the earlier poskim. The Maharik actually said that there's a minhag that it's always mutter to shovel in the river because of this gemara, which seems to imply that. The Shulchan Aruch is machmir. He says, ideally, you really need to create a stationary body of water in the river. Like, you have to make a partition. You have to use mats. He bases this on the Rambam. And the Rambam quotes the Maharik and says, though, that if there's no other mikvah, you can be makel in this Maharik, you can rely on this Maharik, and you can use river. So in general, there are other complications as well, by the way, just because you find water that you dug doesn't mean it's a mayan. So for example, mayan water is kosher, right? If you find a natural body of water underneath the ground, that's kosher mikveh water. But let's say you find, you dig and you find water, it could be water that came from a river. Just because you dug it doesn't mean it's from a mayan. So the Mishnah actually calls this meitamtsa shelo pasku. Right? So how do you know? So the poskim come up with different ways. Rishon Zalman Arbach used to say that he held the halacha that if there are minerals in the water, then it's named mayan. That the poskim discuss this, but the first and foremost, most important thing is to discover or to, you know, kind of clarify what type of water are we dealing with. Are we dealing with a bor or a mayan? Because we discussed how a bor requires 40 sa for sure, and a bor requires it to be static. Mayan doesn't necessarily require 40, and it can be flowing. So that's the most important first level of distinction. Both of these types of mikvos are essentially getting to the different forms of creating the type of medium that can connect you back to your ultimate root, whether it's something that's naturally in this world or something that you're creating that's still static and natural and pure and getting back to the root. Now we have to deal with some of the problems that come up with mikvos. For example, zechila, leaking. So when it comes to, especially a bor, when it comes to a standard mikveh that we use, if a mikveh has a leak, it's a puzzle. So if it's a mayan and it's flowing, it's leaking, it's fine, right? But the mikveh that we use, which is a bor, can't have any leaking. So what type of leaking is a problem? So remember, what's the problem with leaking? It creates something that's not static. It creates movement. It creates flux. And the whole point of mikveh is going back to something that's root, something that's beyond zman, beyond time. We're going back to our root selves. We need something that is perfect, and we need something that is static. So what's considered a problematic leak? So the Rashba has a shita, which is only a zechila nikeres, only a recognizable leak is a problem. So why? Because we're human. You can't be perfect. Everything is going to have, you know, some leakage, but once it gets to the point where it's a serious leak, that's a problem. But especially back then where they used to have mikvos in the ground, and the water, you know, some of the water is going to seep into the dirt, of course there's going to be some leaking. But the question is, what's the threshold where it becomes a problem? So Shulchan quotes this Rashba and says that only a zichili in the karis, only a recognizable leak is a problem. Now, we're going to have to discuss what type of problem, what is zichili in the karis in a moment, but the Vilna Gaon asks a big kasha on Shulchan Aruch, which is, there's a debate of zichili l'mala mimam. So we need 40 sa'a, and there's a debate about what about a leak that's above the 40 sa'a line? So you already have 40 sa that's static, and then above that, let's say you have 50 sa in your mikvah, zechil l'mala mimam, above that 40 sa line, there's a leak. So the 40 underneath the line is stagnant, right? It's not moving. But there is a leak above it. So the Shulchan Aruch says, he thinks that if the leak is above the 40 sa line, it's kosher. Right? Since there's 40 sa, it's kosher. Right? And the Ramah says that we should be machmir here, but the Rashba Shita of Zechila Nikeres is based on the Rashba's other Shita, the Zechila L'mala Mimem is normally possible. And he's qualifying this Shita by saying that even though it's normally possible, if it's not Nikeres, if it's not recognizable, it won't possible the mikvah. So the question of the Vilna Gaon is, how can you use the Rashba Shita as your Shita? The Rashba's talking about a case that you already think is fine, meaning you're using this Shita, the Rashba, for under the 40 cell line. The Rashba is using this for over the 40 cell line, right? Even the Rashba agrees that Zechili Nikeres is puzzle underneath the 40 cell line. So it's a bomb kasha, and the modern proskim, Rav Moshe, had to deal with this, and he said that we can still be mekel. I mean, we don't have to hold like this, we can still hold like a Shulchan Aruch. What is a Shulchan Aruch essentially doing? So there are different ways of approaching Shulchan Aruch. The most posh way of approaching the Shulchan Aruch is that he's using the Rashba's principle for his own shitas, and he's not holding like the Rashba. He's holding like the principle of the Rashba, which is that Zechili Nikeres it's not established as a zechila. Now, once again, zechila shein nikeres, zechila nikeres, how do we establish these? Number two is a zechila that's not recognizable not zechila at all? Is it minor zechila? Does it matter if it's above the 40th line, not above the 40th line? How important are these distinctions? So the Shulchan Aruch is essentially saying that zechila shein nikeres, a zechila, a leak that's not recognizable, is not a zechila at all, and therefore even under the 40th line, it would be fine. Which obviously gets so many questions, like, but then you're not going to have 40 sah. Okay, so Zechil Sheinei Keres means that, like, it's literally just a tiny drip, and you're going to be refilling it. Like, how's this working? These are a lot of questions you could be asking. But the Rav Moshe's makel when it comes to still relying on the Shulchan Aruch, even with the Vilna Gaon's question, and you have to say the Vilna Gaon's using the Rashba's principle without adopting the actual Rashba Shita. So what is Zechila? What is recognizable? So there are different ways of approaching recognizability. One way of approaching it is, like, and you have to think, like, how would you recognize a leak? So one way is if you see the actual water of the mikveh moving, right, moving down. You're like, there must be a leak. Another approach is if you look on the outside and you see water is flowing out. You see, like, a puddle of water, you see it's wet. Different ways of doing it. So what's the difference? The difference is that it's a lot more makel to say that you have to see the leak on top, because for you to be seeing the actual water of the mikveh moving down, there has to be a serious leak. So Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Inspector, he was one of the poskim who said he is huge kula. He says it's only if it's a major leak. It's only if you can actually see it from on top. If you can't see it from on top, then it's not a clear leak, right? If it's moving on top, it's a clear leak. Otherwise, no. On the outside, it basically requires a lot less of a leak. So the Imre Yosher says that on the outside of the mikveh, only if you see on the outside, even if you see on the outside, I should say, then that's considered Zechilin Nekeres. But he does qualify and say if it's dripping, it's okay. If it's a flow, then it's a problem. So even though he's a little more machmir on where you're looking, he still says, so actually some of the achronim, they note that the Shulchan Aruch Shita, to use a mat to create a partition in the river that we just mentioned, it actually seems to be like the Shita of Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Inspector, because there would probably still be some zechil in that case. So it would have to be that he's a little more makel, which makes sense based on what we just said, but that would be how we would define Nikara. So now, what about, and here's an interesting question, what if water is flowing into the mikveh, not out of it? So what are some cases? Well, let's say you left the faucet on, so the water is flowing into the mikveh. So what's the real nature of this question? Number one, how we define zechila, is flowing just the concept of movement itself, or is it leaking? Right? Zechila literally is referring to leaking, but is it the fact that this is now a moving mikveh, it's no longer static? So then you'd say, yeah, it doesn't matter where water is coming from. But if it's about, no, definitively the movement has to be out, because if the movement's coming in, either that's part of creating the mikveh, you can come up with different ways of getting around the problem, especially the more you want the mikveh to be pure, perfect, static, the more that you'd be very inclined to say any movement's a problem. So many shitas are mikel. They say zechil is only water that's flowing out, but the Devar Chaim and others are machmir. He thinks that even this would be zechila. There are some who don't think he really means this, but he seems to say that. Another version of this is filters. So normally we're very careful to keep the filter off when someone goes into the mikveh. But what if the mikveh, the person who runs the mikveh, what if they accidentally left the filter on? Right? They forgot to turn it off. So there are many shitas that are makel. So for example, Rav Moshe's makel for a similar story we mentioned previously when it comes to water flowing into the mikveh, that since the water's coming back in, it's not really a leak. So he bases this on the Rivash. It's not really. So other are machmir. So the case of Rivash was where the water was coming back into the mikveh by itself. In this case, there's an external koach, an external force pushing the water back in. So others don't really like the use of the Rivash. But the Rav Moshe's sheet is basically, it has to be a real zechila, a real leak. The water's coming back in, so it's fine. Again, this is assuming that movement's fine. It's not about movement, it's more either losing the shear or like a fundamental movement where you're really going to be losing it. And Rabbani and other poskim also think that because there's an external force, it's not zechila. I mean, according to some poskim, zechila is only if the water is coming up by itself naturally. It's literally just like spilling out. If something is pushing it out, then it's okay. Then you can say, like, what's the real distinction there? And remember, many, many are machmir. They say that there is a problem here. And the more that we want it to be static, the more we want it to be perfect, the more we want it to be something which literally doesn't move at all, is beyond space and time, to a degree, the more we'd be inclined to say that this would be a problem. So now we're going to go to another very, very... It's an issue that comes up all the time. It's a very popular, and it's a problem when it comes to a lot of mikvahs, and how to deal with this problem is the issue of shuvim, mayim shuvim. So the principle of mayim shuvim is that if the water was in a kli, then the water can't be used for mikvah. It's called mayim shuvim. So for example, if you take water in a bucket and then pour it into the mikvah, that's a problem. So if a person pushed the water into mikvah, literally any use of getting involved in the water makes it a problem. So what's the svara? The svara is that the water needs to be natural. Remember, mikvah is going back to your roots, going back to your pure root. Pre-creation, you're recreating yourself. You're going back to a formless state. It's before Yedei Adam, before the hands of man are involved in the world. So you can't enter a kli, you can't be involved in it. So then the question is, how do we do this? So first of all, there are some dinim involved here, some very ancient dinim. So one din, which comes up, is that once you have a kosher mikvah of 40 sa, then you can put in as much mayim shuvim as you want. Right? What's the svar? As far as once you have a shei mikvah, once you have a pure mikvah, the mikvah can transform all the other mayim shuvim into good water. So that's, you know, there's horror stories, by the way, where a man didn't understand halacha, so he used to put mayim shuvim in first and then put the kosher 40 sun afterwards, and he did this for years. It was mamish, crazy, crazy story. You never want to hear such things. And there's another shita, which is that if three lugan that fall into the mikvah before the 40 sun, meaning if three lugan of mayim shuvim, then that's only asur d'rabanan. It's not asur d'oraisa. So these are some clues which are very important to know when people are running mikvahs, and just mistakes happen. There are ways of dealing with it, and it's important to know these principles. So mayim shuvim in general, there's a big debate whether mayim shuvim is an asur d'oraisa or asur d'rabanan. Is this something which is fundamentally problematic? Is it just, you know, a geder in terms of other things? So the Rambam thinks that mayim shuvim, he seems to imply that it's only pasul d'rabanan, and the Shulchan Aruch Nirma, they disagree. They think that it's a din d'oraisa. And when it comes to dealing with mayim shuvim, there are ways of getting around it. So, for example, we have, let's say, mayim shuvim, drawn water, and we want to now make that water kosher l'mikvah. So what do we do? So the halacha is something called hamshacha, which is that if the mayim shuvim first rolls on the floor and then flows into the mikvah, then it may not be a problem of mayim shuvim. So the Rambam thinks it's kosher. So the Rambam might think it's kosher because he thinks it's only nesu d'rabanan to begin with. Others think it takes it down from a nesu d'oraisa to a nesu d'rabanan. But because the Rambam thinks it's a nesu d'rabanan to begin with, then hamshacha would basically get it from a nesu d'rabanan to being actually mutter. But there are two requirements for hamshacha, for this process of having the water flow, roll into the mikvah. One is that there has to be at least three tfachim of flowing. The other is that there needs to be karka, which is ra'il vloa, which is the water can seep into it and be absorbed and then come back out of it. So why? So if you think about what does hamshacha do? What, you have water which is problematic. It's now touched by human hands. It was in a kli. It's no longer natural. How do you get it to become natural? How do you get it back to a proper state of mikvah water, of tahor, water that can become, that can help you become tahor? So one way of thinking of it is that you can try to recreate the water. How are you going to recreate the water? You're going to allow the water to become, that's the Rail of Loa concept, where it's swallowed up by the ground, and then when it comes back out, it's like new water. So that's the Mordechai's approach, which is that the karka belua, the ground that swallows the water, it spits it back out and it's like new water. So when you have the water roll down this type of floor, it's becoming new, so it loses its status of mayim shuvim because it basically becomes mayim chadash, it becomes new water. Another approach, a similar approach, is the concept of distance, which is that when the water removes itself from the makam, in which case it had its previous identity, it becomes disconnected to its original place and therefore gets a new status. So it's the concept of Rav Loa, as opposed to literally being regurgitated and recreated. It's distance from its original place, which gives it its new status. That's the Rivash. And he says it's an end distance. So we actually try to do both. We use cement because we have three tvachim distance, and also we assume it's Rav Loa, so it's kind of like swallowing up the water and spitting it back out, allowing it to become new. So that's one way that we solve the problem. But even when we solve the problem, there's another issue that we have in mikvahs, which is getting the water into the mikvah. Because let's say you have water, you collect it on the roof, now you want to get it from the roof, it rolls down the three tefachim, it goes, you know, let's say you have a way of collecting it, whatever it is, but you want to, whatever the case is, whether, let's say there's no mayim shivim problem, right? And you're collecting water, and you collect it on the roof of the mikvah house. So what happens usually is that when you collect the water on the roof, it has to then go into the pipes and then travel down into the area where people are tovel, people are going to the mikvah. What's the problem, though? The problem is that there are curved pipes in the building. So let's say someone builds a mikvah in the basement of a building, then it's difficult to have a pipe run like literally through the middle of the building straight from where they're collecting the water into the mikvah. So usually there's like curved pipes, so it bends around and transports the water. But what's the problem? The problem is that the Ravid, according to, you know, a certain way of reading the Ravid is very machber. He says that a curved pipe is a kli. Why? It's a kli because it has a base kibble. So, and Chiddush Ari Leib, Reb Ari Leib Malin, explains what's the Ravid saying? He's saying that because the pipe curves, the water is going to change direction. And therefore, when it changes direction, there's like a pause, a large enough pause, that it's considered to be a kli kibble, as if it's resting there. And therefore, the water, you know, conceptually, quote-unquote, stopping for a moment to change directions, so it's considered to be a kli kibble, and that's going to make it mekabel tuma, and therefore we're going to have a big problem. And many poskim are nohag like this chumrah understanding of the Ravid, and it's a problem, right? So what are you going to do? So one approach is to not have curved pipes. Very difficult to do, but some think that you have to do that. There are some poskim that think that what you can do is you can construct a pipe without really making it into a bent pipe. So what you do is you take two unbent pipes and you make a hole in one of them and insert one through the pipes, one of the pipes into the hole, so that it's never fully coming to a stop. Meaning it's, as opposed to bending, it's like enough of a continuous flow to get out. So this is a chumrah which not everyone really holds of to begin with, and even those who do, there are ways of getting around it by trying to minimize the bend, minimize the stopping as much as possible. Now, one of the most fundamental issues when it comes to mikveh is tap water. We want to make sure that you're not using tap water. Like all of Klal Yisrael's minhag lehalacha is not to use tap water for mikveh. And why not? So what is tap water? So one approach is that tap water, sink water, faucet water, is mayim shuvim. Why? Because it's entered into a water meter, which is a kli, and therefore it becomes problematic for mikvah water. There are those who want to say maybe it's not mayim shuvim. Not lahalacha. Lacha, it is mayim shuvim. But in the discussion, in Lamdus, we want to understand why. So maybe it's not mayim shuvim. Why wouldn't it be? So you could say because the water meter is a kli, but it's a kli that's mechubar lekark. It's connected to the ground. It's made to be in the ground. So just like it's not mekabel tuma, right? Something that's mechubar lekarka, that's made for being in the ground, it's not mekabel tuma. We talked about, you know, toilets and things like that, where it's not mekabel tuma. Perhaps it shouldn't trigger mayim shuvim. Shouldn't be a problem. So the Noda Behuda says, absolutely not. Mamish, mayim shuvim, you have to be machmir. Why? Because if something is made to be in the karka, it's not mekabel tuma, but that's only in tuma. Right, we're talking about, when it comes to mikvah, it's not a question about whether or not it's mekabel tuma, it's a question of whether it's a kli. And if it's a kli, it's still mayim shuvim, even if it's not mekabel tuma. So tap water, which comes from water tanks that are in the ground, yes, maybe you get around tuma questions, but it's still mayim shuvim because it's a kli. There are shitas that are mekel, not lahalacha, no one really holds of them. But the reason why, even within the sugya of lamdus, the shitas are mekel is because they would say that either it is din tuma, or once it's made to be used for the ground, once it's nasa l'shamish as a karka, then it's like karka, and it's not even a kli. So the Gedulei Tara is famous for having that shita, but again, no one holds like that halacha. We hold that you cannot use tap water. We assume that tap water is mayim shuvim, and therefore we do hashaka. what is Hashaka? So we'll end off with this, which is, how do we actually build our mikvahs? So the issue when it comes to mikvahs nowadays is that we want clean water. People have a certain hygiene level where you don't want to just be dipping yourself in rainwater. So we want to figure out a way that you can keep the water clean, or change out the water, keep the water clean, figure out how to use tap water without using tap water. How do we allow you to go into a clean mikveh with it still being rainwater, halachically? So what we do is like this. It's called hashaka, bor hashaka, which is we construct two boros adjacent to each other. So two mikvahs are connected to each other. One is a bor tefila, which is the one you're going into, you're dipping into, and one is a bor hashaka, which is the rainwater, the actual pure mikvah. And the way it works is that a bor tefila has the tap water, and it's connected to the bor hashaka through a hole, as in they're adjacent to each other, and there's a hole. And what does this assume? So first of all, we're assuming that the mayim shuvim can become kosher when it touches the rainwater. So you're basically having two mikvahs touching each other, assuming that the kosher mikvah is transforming the non-kosher mikvah. So where is that coming from? We have to understand what that is. And also, the gap, this neck of hashaka, the gap has to be around, I would say, 2 inches, the size of 2 fingers, right? Shifaferet hanod. So the Mishnah talks about this in terms of the kinds of hashaka. The issue is like this. We're connecting two kosher mikvahs. So the Mishnah talks about this in a little bit of a different context. The Mishnah talks about two boros that each have 20 sa'. And this concept of this whole connecting it together can connect 20 sa' together to create 40 sa'. So this concept of this hole that connects two portions of water together is enough to create one whole mikvah. Now, the poskim that are using this creatively are saying it's also enough to kasher mayim shuvim, right? The Mishnah doesn't talk about that. The Mishnah doesn't talk about kashering mayim shuvim. It talks about just connecting two bodies of rainwater together. We're makel halacha because most Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch do assume that we can apply this principle for the bor hashaka to kasher mayim shuvim. So how does this work? So first of all, what's the concept here? The concept here is that it's essentially a concept of bittul in a transformative way. So there are different sugyas of bittul and rov and how these things work, and taking something which is potentially pasul and knocking it out or kashering it, things like that. So the idea would be that once you have a kosher mikvah, anything which connects to that mikvah, remember we talked about before, if you pour more water into a kosher mikveh, even if it's rainwater, once it has a status of a kosher mikveh, it's transformative. So we're applying that here through the connective model, where we're not pouring it in, but we're connecting them together, and the status of a kosher mikveh now transforms the mikveh, which is parallel to it right next to it. So now the question is, what is the nature of that transformation? So what's a big nafka? I mean, what if the hole is closed while someone goes into the mikveh? Is it working that once the mikvahs are connected, the mayim shuvim, the non-natural rainwater, is now transformed? So of course you can close up the hole. Just when you pour more in, you have to pour more, you know, mayim shuvim, you have to reopen the gap so that we can kasher it. Or is it a continuous flow, kind of like electricity, where there's a kosher mikvah, a non-kosher mikvah, the non-kosher mikvah is getting its kosher status from the kosher mikvah. If you plug up the hole, it's now a non-kosher mikvah. It's kind of like if you close a circuit, if you take the light bulb out, if it's not getting electricity, it's no longer lighting up. If you close that hole between the two bodies of water, it's no longer kosher. So the Shulchan Aruch is actually makel and says as long as they touched at one point, the mayim shuvim is mutter, and even if you plug up the hole, it's fine. Chad pami is kosher. And it's based on the Rush. So there are different shitas that are machmir. Another problem is that we empty out the mikveh every day. So you have to be very careful that the mikveh that you're entering had at one point touched it. Because if, let's say, someone forgot to open it up at one point, you're not going in a kosher mikveh. So we have to be super careful about that. But the shach is actually machmir altogether. And he quotes Rabbi Yerucham, who says that the mefarshim are mistapik about this question. And therefore, the shach says, that's tov lachmir, you should be machmir. And the minhag is actually to be machmir, right? So we keep the hole open when people go into the mikvah. Especially when women go into the mikveh, because that's much more serious. When men go into the mikveh, the plug actually is usually closed, and we rely on the Shulchan Aruch. But when women go in, we keep it open. So another possible way of building a mikveh is through Zuriya. And this is a related way, which is that instead of having two mikvahs being parallel to each other, once we have a kosher mikveh 40 sa'a, you can put in as much mayim shuvim as you want. So you're basically pouring on top. So the way it works, the way Zuriya works, is that first we create a kosher mikveh 40 sa'a, and then we add tap water into that mikveh, and the tap is turned on in such a way that the water arrives from the same direction as the megishamim, and after the tap water arrives at the bor Zuriya, the tap water will overflow into the bor tefillah. So the actual tefillah mikveh is going to be almost 100% tap water. And one big advantage of this is that sometimes people forget to unplug in the bor hashaka, and that's a very big halachic problem, so this kind of gets around that. It's also, some rainwater will be here, so some people, you know, still aren't so comfortable with that, but there are different approaches for how to do this, and that's definitely one approach. So we have bor hashaka and bor Zuriya. And there's actually a big problem, potentially, with the bor hashaka, because there's a sugya that comes up, that what if you add something to 40 sa'a of rainwater and then take a sa'a out? So it's called nasan sa'a v'natal sa'a. So the Gemara Yevamos and the Mishnah Mikvaos talks about this, where the case is you have a mikveh that's 40 sa'a of rainwater, and you put in a sa'a of something pasul. And then one sa'a of water is taken out, so the mikveh is kosher. So the question is, number one, how long can we do this for? And the answer given is ad rubo, right? As long as there's still a rove of rainwater, it's okay. But the question, the real question, is what is happening in this Gemara? What's going on here? What does this mean? Like, what, for example, what is really being put into the mikveh? So the Rashi and Beit Tam think that it's limited to mei peros. Right? He's putting in mei peros, so we still need rove rainwater because the mei peros isn't changed or transformed into kosher water. But mayim shuvim, if it's mayim shuvim, then one can continue to do this forever because mayim shuvim becomes kosher when you do this Zuriya. But the Rambam thinks that it's talking about mayim shuvim. So even for mayim shuvim, according to the Rambam, we would always need rove to be rainwater. And l'halacha, the Shulchan Aruch is mekel, paskins like the Rush and Rabbeinu Tam, that for mayim shuvim we can do this forever, but the Shach is machmir. The Shach thinks that we should be machmir like the Rambam, always have a majority rove, at least 51% rainwater. So now we have a problem. Now we have a problem, because according to many, we should be machmir like the Rambam and the Shach. And if we are machmir, then if we also keep the chumrah of keeping the plug open, like the other shach who's machmir, remember shach is machmir in two different places, then we're going to have a little bit of a problem, because what's going to happen? The water will end up getting displaced eventually. And in the course of a few months, there won't be 51% rainwater in the mikveh, in the real rainwater mikveh, connected to the tefillah mikveh, and you know, some of the rainwater is going to end up in the tefillah mikveh when people immerse themselves, and that water gets renewed every day. So eventually, the rainwater mikveh is going to be less than 51% rainwater, or at least less than, you know, 50% rainwater, and we're going to have a problem. So what are we going to do? So you can say, oh, we don't hold like the chumras of the shach. That's one approach. Another approach is to use 100% rainwater, but that's not very clean. People don't like that. Some people say go to the ocean. Again, not very practical. People don't really want to do that. But the Chabad has an approach which a lot of poskim do like, even non-Chabad poskim like, which is the approach of bor al gabi bor. Now, this is what they do. It's essentially hashaka, but instead of having the two mikvahs parallel next to each other, they're on top of each other. So the rainwater, the mikvah of rainwater is underneath, and that one comes first, and the tap water is on top, and it's heated, you know, which rises, and the person dunks into this upper tefillah mikvah, and the hole then connects these two mikvahs. So, essentially, this is making it, people think that this approach is going to basically lessen the displacement of water, and, you know, there's other advantages. Also, it's also easier to build. You only need to build one hole in the ground with two levels. Some critique it and say that it's, you know, it's moving, it's a katafris in a chibor, it's sloped, different sugars come up in Shas that make this potentially problematic, but many say that it's not a problem because the problem of having a sloped, you know, mikvahs on an angle that connect to each other is that it's going to be moving, And here, the water is all static. So without getting into those, these are very, very interesting sugyas. Many poskim think that these mikvahs are kosher l'chatchila, solve many, many problems. Some are actually super, super, it's not even machmir, it's like just adding everything in. They do a bor hashaka and a bor agabe bor, and some even do bor zriya as well. So there are many different ways of getting around this problem when you hold of the chumras of the shach. But essentially, we covered so many fascinating, fascinating topics related to mikvah, relating to the nature mikvah, the machshava mikvah, having a mikvah that is reflecting of the concept of something pure, natural, static, something that helps you get back to a pure, natural root state of existence so you can come back into the world reborn, ready to live with the ideals of truth, the Kol Torah Kulo that we learned in the womb, really living our purpose. And we should be inspired that, number one, we understand the depth, the wisdom, the profound nature of Kol Torah Kulo, every sugya in Shas, every sugya in Torah. We understand that everything is deep, interconnected, and full of brilliance. But also, when we go to a mikveh, now we can experience on a much deeper level with these covenants, with this wisdom, with this incredible Torah. And we should be inspired to use these ideas in all our other learning and continue striving to live a life of truth, Avodas Hashem, and achieving our ultimate purpose.